Hello, everybody. I am John Allen, the editor of Crux, your one-stop shopping destination for the very best in smart, wired, and independent Catholic journalism. You can find us online at cruxnow.com. I am also the host of this show, Last Week in the Church. This is the show, as you well know, and that rhymed, by the way, in which we raid the journalistic fridge. We take out stories that are a few days old, serve them up piping hot and delicious. Of course, we weren't on last week because my wife, Elise, and I were on vacation. So we actually got 2 weeks big papal, Vatican, and global church news to cover. Here's what's on the menu for this week. First, it is World Series week at the Vatican. It's not quite Super Bowl week. Around here, we tend to use that metaphor for papal transition events, but it's nevertheless a big deal. Not quite the same ratings. Not quite the same level of popular buzz, but still a big deal. Pope Francis later this week will be creating new cardinals. He's going to be taking a trip with deep symbolic resonance. He's going to be meeting with all the cardinals of the world. And as if that weren't enough on its own, he may also be throwing a sort of X, but not X anymore, cardinal into the mix. We are going to unpack all of that in terms of what's going on. Second, we have nettlesome Nicaragua. The government in Nicaragua has arrested a Catholic bishop, causing deep church-state issues. We'll unpack all of that. A cardinal under fire. One of the most senior cardinals in the Vatican has been accused in a class action lawsuit of inappropriate sexual conduct in Canada. He has vigorously denied these charges. We'll explain what's going on there. And finally, the Pope in Ukraine. The Pope and President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine hooked up on the phone recently. It was their third phone conversation, at least that we know about, since the Russian invasion in February. We'll explain what that might have to do with whether the Pope is or is not going to Ukraine next month. All that and more is waiting for you on this week's Last Week in the Church. So please stick around. All right, everybody, welcome back. Happy Tuesday to you. Hope you had a wonderful fortnight. We were off last week, and basically we had a fantastic vacation, except for the fact that at one point my bag was stolen by an unidentified thief, which contained not only my wallet with like all my credit cards and cash, but every form of ID I have on Earth. So like all my Italian ID, all my American ID, all of it gone in a poof. Really, right now, the only way I have to prove that I'm me is that you are watching this video. So if you are, I may be coming to you for an affidavit certifying that you know that I'm me. So just so you know, may be calling on you. In the meantime, however, let's talk some Vatican and church news. So, as I said at the top of the show, this is kind of World Series week on the Vatican. Not quite at the level of the Super Bowl. As I say, we tend to reserve that metaphor for papal transition events. In other words, meaning either the death or resignation of a pope or the election of a new one. That's our Super Bowl. But the next level down, I guess, in terms of splash and sizzle and significance, would be what's going on this week, because it's consistory week. That's the period in which the Pope creates new cardinals, who therefore become not only new members of the Electoral College, who will select the next Pope, but also at least a few of them, potentially candidates themselves to become the new Pope. In addition to that, the day after the consistory, that will be next Saturday, Pope Francis on Sunday will be traveling to L'Aquila in central Italy. Now, popes travel inside Italy all the time, but the significance of this is that L'Aquila is the final resting place of Pope Celestine V, 13th century pope, only reigned for 5 months. His claim to fame is that prior to Benedict XVI, he was the last pope to voluntarily resign the papacy. Pope Benedict actually went to L'Aquila 4 years before he resigned, and with the benefit of hindsight, that clearly seemed like foreshadowing. Given all the speculation of late, about Pope Francis's health and how long he was going to go on, whether he will or won't resign. The fact that he is going has raised a lot of interest. And so that's happening. Then after that, Pope Francis is holding 2 days of meetings with all the cardinals of the world. So not just the 16 new voting age cardinals and 20 overall that he will be creating in this consistory, but, you know, all the cardinals of the world who can make it to Rome. The idea being he wants to brief them on his recent document, his new apostolic constitution, overhauling the Roman Curia, kind of the fruit of the reform he has been working on for the last 9+ years. So that's a lot of activity going on, which in and of itself, you know, no matter what else, that would be of interest. We're talking about creating new people who are going to vote for the next pope, potentially creating new candidates. We're talking about whether the pope is or is not going to resign, and if so, when. We're also talking about, you know, Vatican reform and having all of the plausible candidates to be the next pope in the same place, at the same time, on the same stage. I mean, that has got must-see TV written all over it, right? But as if that weren't enough. I mean, this is like one of those infomercials on TV, right? Wait, that's not all. Because, like, in addition to all of that, it turns out Pope Francis may be dealing us yet another wild card. Because here's the thing. You see this show on Tuesday, but we actually recorded on Monday. So yesterday, that is Monday, as we record this, there's a breaking news story here in Rome. It is as yet unconfirmed, so can't say with 100% confidence this is true. But the report is that Pope Francis on Saturday called up Italian Cardinal Angelo Becciu, and told him that he wants him to come to the consistory and he wants him to take part in those 2 days of meetings with all the cardinals of the world. Now, why does that matter? Well, if you have been following the bouncing ball here on Last Week in the Church, you know the Becciu saga. Let me explain. You know what? To quote the movie Princess Bride, there is too much. Let me sum up. All right? So here's the summary. Cardinal Becciu used to be the Pope's chief of staff. He was the sostituto, the secretary of state. Then Pope Francis removed him from that job, but promoted him, in a sense, made him a cardinal, and named him to run the Congregation for the Causes of Saints. That lasted until Cardinal Becciu was one of 10 defendants indicted by a Vatican tribunal for financial crime as part of this controversial $400 million land deal. Now, even before those indictments were issued, Pope Francis kind of brought the hammer down because he called in Becciu one day, kind of out of a clear blue sky, and told him that not only was he firing him as the head of the Congregation for Saints, but he was also revoking his privileges as a cardinal. Becciu would no longer be able to participate in the next conclave or do anything else that cardinals typically do, okay? So he technically remained on the books as a cardinal, but all of his privileges were taken away. At the time, we called it a defenestration, okay? That the Pope had defenestrated Cardinal Becciu. Now, you know, curiouser and curiouser, then on Holy Thursday of the year this happened, Pope Francis went to Cardinal Becciu's apartment to visit him on Holy Thursday. None of us knew quite what to make of that. Then, you know, these criminal indictments come out. Cardinal Becciu is on trial. That trial is far from being over. In fact, before the summer recess, they had finished hearing from most of the 10 defendants who are under indictment. But there are something like 200 other witnesses that the defense and the prosecution together have called. I mean, this trial, theoretically, if all of those people are going to be called, if they're all actually going to testify, and if they take as long as the other witnesses have, this could be going on for years. So in other words, obviously, no verdict, no finding of innocence or guilt in this trial. But the latest development is that Cardinal Becciu has said that, and he said this publicly, on the record, to reporters, that the Pope has invited him to come to the consistory and also to the meetings of cardinals. And he is touting this, that is, Becciu is touting this, is he is being reintegrated. In other words, his privileges as a cardinal, according to him, are being fully restored. Now, we, like presumably every other media outlet in the world, have asked the Vatican for comment on this. As of this recording, we do not yet have that comment. So not entirely clear whether this is true, and if so, what to make of it. But let's assume for a moment it is true. Pope Francis defenestrated Becciu before this trial began. And now, apparently, before the trial has ended, he is, what, like, re-fenestrating him? Un-defenestrating him? My personal favorite is de-defenestrating him. I like that because it's D.D., and that actually happens to be the name of the prosecutor who was going after Becciu in this trial, an Italian lawyer by the name of Alessandro D.D. And so you could say Becciu maybe is being D.D.'d, but in this case, in a positive, not a negative sense. I don't know. We'll have to play with that and figure it out. But in any event, if this is all true, it certainly is going to make this consistory and these meetings with cardinals even more interesting. Because can you imagine, like, when the Pope meets with all the cardinals, he's supposed to be talking about his Vatican reform. And for more than a year now, like, the proof of that reform has, at least by, you know, Vatican spokespersons and so on, one proof of the reform has supposedly been this trial in which, for the very first time, a cardinal of the Catholic Church is facing criminal charges in the Vatican. Well, now, even before that trial has done its work, the Pope apparently, at least in the court of public opinion, will be seen as passing a kind of preliminary judgment, which certainly might raise some interesting questions, right, in those meetings about how these reforms are actually working. Fortunately, those meetings with cardinals are not going to be public. It's not a pay-per-view event, but it would certainly be fascinating, right, to be a fly on the wall for those conversations. Needless to say, we are going to have full coverage of all of this on the Crux site. That is, again, cruxnow.com, cruxnow.com. So be following us later this week for the consistory, the outing to L'Aquila, and also the meetings of cardinals. You know what? One final note about that meeting to L'Aquila. I mean, yes, it is true, Pope Benedict went to L'Aquila, and then he eventually resigned. Now Pope Francis is going to L'Aquila. We don't know whether he will eventually resign. He may or may not. But here's the thing. If you pay careful attention to what Benedict said when he actually went to L'Aquila, and what Pope Francis is saying about Pope Celestine V right now, they are both pointing to that resignation. Not necessarily as a harbinger of their own resignations. What they're actually saying is that the resignation marked a great gesture of humility, of self-abnegation, of selflessness by Pope Celestine V. And that's what they are holding up as the example they want to emulate. Humility and selflessness, not necessarily resigning the papacy. Whether Francis does or does not do that at some future point, he said he's not thinking about it right now, but he's left it open as a future possibility. We will see. But my point is, the mere fact that a pope goes to L'Aquila and the mere fact that he praises Pope Celestine V doesn't necessarily mean he's getting ready to do the same thing. All right. So that's World Series week at the Vatican. All I can tell you is stay tuned. Let's shift gears slightly to Nicaragua, where the latest development is that Bishop Rolando Alvarez of Matagalpa, that is a city in sort of north central Nicaragua, it's about 80 miles away from the national capital of Managua. Bishop Alvarez, who was originally detained in the headquarters of his chancery in Matagalpa by security forces loyal to President Daniel Ortega, Bishop Olvares has now been arrested, taken to Managua, and put under a kind of house arrest in Managua. Many of his associates, that is his collaborators, people who work for him and so on, they have been put into prison in Managua by the security forces of Daniel Ortega. The Archbishop of Managua in Nicaragua, the same city where Olvares is now being held under house arrest and where many of his collaborators are in prison, that archbishop is, if he's not physically in Rome right now, he is on his way because he is going to be getting his red hat this weekend and then taking part in this meeting of cardinals with the Pope. So imagine the irony. On the one hand, Pope Francis is getting ready to bestow what is considered a tremendous honor on the church in Nicaragua. And at the same time, the government, well, basically is jailing a bishop in the country, which is, you know, I mean, on the scale of hostile gestures that a government could execute with regard to the Catholic Church, that's pretty high up there, right? I mean, I suppose they could have arrested the actual Archbishop of Nicaragua and prevented him from going to Rome. But this is like the next, well, I was going to say the next best thing. I suppose the proper phrase would be the next worst thing that they could do. This bishop's crime, by the way, is that he had been an outspoken opponent of what he considered human rights and political abuses by the government of President Ortega and his wife, Rosa Murillo, who is the vice president of Nicaragua. And they essentially wanted him to stop, and he declined. He continued to be outspoken. And apparently, in Nicaragua, that's reason enough to be thrown in jail. Now, so the bishops of Nicaragua have spoken out forcefully in defense of their brother bishop, who is behind bars. Other bishops' conferences in Central America have spoken out. Cardinal Matteo Zuppi of Bologna, the president of the Italian Bishops' Conference, has spoken out with an appeal for the liberation of the bishop. Pope Francis, in his traditional noontime Angelus address on Sunday, indicated he was following the situation with concern and sorrow. He called for a sincere and open dialogue that, you know, he didn't quite say it, but the idea was that, among other things, would lead to this bishop getting out of jail. So Catholic officialdom has signaled its concern in virtually every way it possibly can. The truth is, the Ortega regime in Nicaragua doesn't really have a great track record with taking expressions of Catholic concern all that seriously. So we will see what they do in this situation. You know, the short-term effect, obviously, is that it makes what was already an awful situation in terms of church-state relations even worse. And if it looks as if they're going to be serious about prosecuting this bishop and potentially imposing some kind of prison sentence, that clearly will also trigger a diplomatic crisis with the Holy See. And, you know, we will see if it leads to a further isolation of Nicaragua. At this point, the hard part is, what leverage really does the Vatican or the Catholic Church have left? I mean, the Catholic bishops of Nicaragua have already tried publicly shaming the government in every way they possibly can. You know, the Pope has gone on record expressing his concern and his sorrow for the situation. Hard to know exactly what tools are left in the toolbox, but nevertheless, this situation certainly poses the question of what those tools might be and how adroit either the Vatican or the local bishops will be in employing. Again, all I can tell you is stay tuned. We will have ongoing coverage. All right. Now, coming back here to the Vatican and the situation involving Canadian Cardinal Mark Ouellette. Now, Cardinal Ouellette is one of the most respected figures on the Vatican scene and has been for a long time. He is the prefect of what until recently was known as the Congregation for Bishops. Now it is the Dicastery for Bishops. By the way, nerd alert, I actually know what the word dicastery means and where it comes from, but I'm not going to bore you with this right now. Just spoiler alert, it has to do with ancient Athens. Someday, when I don't have anything better to talk about, I will break that down. But in any event, point is, Cardinal Ouellette is in charge of the department in the Vatican that is responsible for proposing new bishops around the world to the Pope. Interestingly, it is also responsible for disciplining bishops when there are complaints brought against them, which makes it all the more ironic that in this case, complaint is actually being brought against Cardinal Ouellette. So what's happened is that a lawyer in Canada has filed a class action suit against many members of the Canadian hierarchy on behalf of a number of alleged victims who are claiming various forms of sexual abuse and misconduct. One of the claimants in this class action suit, who has not been identified in Canada, she's only been identified by the initial F, and we know that she is a woman, is claiming that in 2010, Cardinal Ouellette inappropriately touched her, groped her, in effect, and that, you know, under Canadian law, this qualifies sexual misconduct that is actionable. Now, this is a civil, not a criminal claim, but nevertheless, Cardinal Ouellette has vigorously defended himself. He has described these accusations as false and defamatory, indicated he intends to vigorously defend his good name in the course of this litigation. The Vatican has also fairly quickly rallied to Cardinal Ouellette's defense, issuing its own statement in which they said that these accusations were also reviewed in terms of whether there was any crime committed under the church's own code of law, the code of canon law. And the finding was these accusations were not credible and that there was no basis for any canonical action against Cardinal Ouellette. So not only has he asserted his innocence, but the Vatican corporately has kind of stood behind him. So we will see where this case goes. At the moment, there is no indication that Pope Francis has any intention of suspending Cardinal Ouellette from his functions or has asked him to voluntarily do so. Remember, under procedures in cases of accusations of sexual abuse, someone is supposed to be automatically suspended from ministry while an investigation occurs. But the accusation here is not sexual abuse of a minor. It is sexual misconduct with an adult, so that protocol does not apply. So for the moment, Cardinal Ouellette remains the head of the Dicastery for Bishops, remains in full possession of not only his responsibilities as a Vatican prefect, but also his privileges as a cardinal. We fully expect he will be at the consistory this week when his new brother cardinals are created, that he will take part in the meetings with all the cardinals in which Vatican reform is being discussed. And unless and until there is some kind of finding of guilt in this civil litigation, certainly the Vatican statement would indicate that he will continue on. Obviously, if anything should happen to recalibrate that, you know, we will be on top of it and we'll bring it to you. Finally, this week, the Pope and Ukraine. So on August 12th, we know that Pope Francis and President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine had a phone conversation. We know this because President Zelensky tweeted about it afterwards, saying that he had spoken to Pope Francis, that he very much appreciated prayers for Ukraine that Pope Francis had promised him that he was offering. And Zelensky also said he had used the opportunity to brief the Pope on the horrors of the war and the crimes being committed there. Presumably he meant Russian crimes being committed as part of the war. And shortly after that tweet from President Zelensky, Vatican News, which is the official state-sponsored news outlet of the Vatican, also carried a story confirming the phone call. This is at least the third phone conversation we know about between Francis and Zelensky since the Russian invasion on February 24th. We know the two men spoke just 2 days afterwards on February 26th. Again, Zelensky had tweeted about it. We know they spoke on March 22nd because the next day, President Zelensky spoke to the Italian parliament. He was in Rome and talked about a phone conversation that he and Pope Francis had had. Now, there may have been other conversations that neither man has disclosed, but as I say, it's at least the third that we know about. the significance of it is, number one, it indicates that Pope Francis, as he has said so often, is following the situation in Ukraine very closely. But number two, and perhaps more importantly, it's another, it's another step in the ongoing sort of ballet that's been unfolding for a while about whether the Pope is or is not going to go to Kiev next month. Here's the deal. Pope Francis has already confirmed that he is going to Kazakhstan in mid-September to take part in a World Congress of Religions there. It is widely expected, though officially unconfirmed, that while he is in Kazakhstan, he will meet Patriarch Kirill, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church. That's a meeting that would certainly be received warmly by the Russians, that is, not only by the Russian Orthodox, but also by the Kremlin, because it would be a sign that the Vatican is not ostracizing, that the Vatican wants to be an ongoing conversation with them. Now, to offset that, one would suppose the Vatican would be looking for a way to reassure the Ukrainians that talking to the Russians doesn't mean the Pope is throwing Ukraine under the bus. The best way to do that, of course, would be for the Pope to actually physically make a stop in Kiev on the way to Kazakhstan. It has been widely speculated that he might do so. Recently, the Ukrainian ambassador to the Vatican seemed to drop some hints in that direction. His phone conversation with Zelensky on the 12th certainly does nothing to disabuse that notion. Again, unconfirmed on either side of the relationship, but it is still a live possibility. And it would make a great deal of diplomatic sense for a Pope who was trying to thread a needle here, trying on the one hand to express deep concern for the humanitarian consequences of the war and for a country whose sovereignty has been compromised by a foreign aggressor, while at the same time not burning bridges with the Russians to such an extent that he loses any capacity to leverage events behind the scenes. That is an extremely difficult balance to strike. It's going to be fascinating to watch how Francis tries to do it. All right, that is our show for this week. Thank you so much for tuning in. No more vacations on the horizon, so we'll be back next week at this time, same bat channel. In the meantime, please keep reading Crux, that is cruxnow.com. Have a fantastic and blessed week, and we will talk to you again soon.